Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts.
This is RS1.
Part of the Radio Show Limited Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome along. This is John Heindorf along with Peter Mackay, and we're going to be taking you through the 6 hours of Fuji qualifying, which will come up in a few minutes' time. A very good morning to you if you're in the United Kingdom. Looks like it's going to be another scorcher, with temperatures getting up over 30 Celsius in some parts of the country, which we are looking forward to mightily. In Fuji, it's been a little damp, but not as bad as it could have been. We've had three free practice sessions. The last one brought out another batch of penalties. We'll go through all of that for you. If you want to get in touch with us at RSL_studio, you can find us there on the platform formerly known as Twitter. I'll be keeping an eye on that. And Peter Mackay will be taking us through. It's going to be like an episode of Crown Court. We'll be going through all of the penalties. We're setting the grid for the race tomorrow. Hope you can join us for our live exclusive radio coverage then as well. Stand by for action as we head into the shadow of Mount Fuji for qualifying here on the Radio Show Limited network of audio and visual channels.
The FIA World Endurance Championship on RS1.
So, we are ready to go. I was going to say ready to go racing, ready to go qualifying, at least for the 6 hours of Fuji. Say good morning to Peter Mackay. Hello, Peter. How are you feeling?
Very good morning, John. I'm rearing to go, ready for this qualifying session here at Fuji Speedway. And as you say, many drivers and teams have felt the wrath of the stewards since we signed off after free practice three a few hours ago.
We'll go through that in a second. This is the sixth and penultimate round of the FIA World Endurance Championship, which kicked off with the 1,000 miles of Sebring on St. Patrick's Day and went through Portimao and Spa and Le Mans and Monza. We find ourselves here, and of course Bahrain is the contractual as well as traditional end of the season. We've had the three free practice sessions, all markedly different. Very wet in free practice one, fully dry in free practice two, and damp but drying in free practice three. What hasn't changed is within every single one, Peter, of those sessions, is we've had drivers up before the beak and a couple to talk about, at least in FP3. Go on, I'll let you start.
Well, I think probably the most important one to start with will be the number 34 Inter-Europol competition LMP2 car, the Le Mans winning LMP2 car, that had a fairly significant impact with one of the AF Corsa Ferraris. The team have been given a suspended drive through penalty to the end of the season. So if they don't transgress again, they won't have to serve it. So at the moment they're okay, but they're on probation, if you like. However, the big story now is coming into our GTE AM qualifying session. Both car 56, that's Rexy, the AO racing car, and number 21, the AF Corsa Ferrari, have both been given 5 minute stop and go penalties for crossing the white line at pit entry. So for a 15-minute qualifying session, that's a fairly heavy penalty, actually.
And I'm right in saying as well, I think, whilst the into Europol was the transgressor. It was transgressed against as well at the final corner, which has brought out another suspended penalty for one of the hypercars.
Yes, that's the number four, Van Wall. Tristan Vautier made contact with the number 34 into Europol competition. Maybe Van Wall see themselves as the vigilantes of the World Endurance Championship, possibly. I don't know, but they've been given exactly the same penalty, suspended until the end of the season.
Okay, what have we got in front of us? It's the usual format, so it'll be GTE Am first, around a circuit that is just over 2.8 miles or 4.5 kilometres. Quite a long pit lane here at just under 500 metres. Winners from last year, as they seem to have been every year bar one, I think we worked out, or Peter did, Toyota Gazoo Racing last year with their number 8 car, WRT, of course, won LMP2. The qualifying records, 129.294 is the one we'll be looking for in when we get to the hypercars. In this particular category, it's a wee bit slower than that. But we'll keep you appraised, not only of the times, but also of the drivers who are going out to qualify. Ben Keating, we expect to be out in the 33, as he has been in the past. Rexy is ready to go. Hello to Shea Adam and to Amanda Jeanette, who I know are tuned in. It's PJ Hyatt getting strapped in with the unicorn on his helmet to the Rexy. We had Roxy, of course, because Rexy was coming here. We had the IMSA debut of the purple dinosaur Roxy at VIR last time out. If you're new to this, each of the categories, GTE, AM, as well as LMP2, and then the senior LMP class, which is actually not LMP anymore. It's called LMH, Le Mans Hypercar, but they are still prototypes. They all get their own sessions, and that basically cuts down a little bit of the traffic. Although, in fairness, we are pretty much equal at 13 cars in this session. It'll be 12 for the hypercars and 11 for the LMP2s. So everybody has a reasonable crack at this. And if I was going to take a crisp Scottish £5 note from you as a bet, Peter, on which car would you be wagering?
You'd have to assume, John, that I had one on my person in the first place.
Well, that is very true.
Well, you can't look past Ben Keating in the Corvette Racing number 33 car. They're already champions with two races to go. But Ben Keating's big kind of qualifying rival this year has been Sarah Bovey, the brilliant Sarah Bovey in the Iron Dames Porsche, the pink machine. However, the one thing we have to consider here, John, which may have an effect on how cars perform in qualifying, is the success ballast that each car carries. Unsurprisingly, the car carrying the most ballast is the Corvette Racing machine for their championship position, but also success in previous events. Dempsey Proton Porsche, number 77, have 15 kilos. Iron Lynx, number 60 Porsche, have 10 kilos. GR Racing, number 86 Porsche, have 5 kilos. The 83 Richard Mille AF Corsa Ferrari has 15 kilos. The ORT by TF Aston has 10, and Iron Dames have 10 kilos as well. So not many cars left, actually, who aren't carrying a little bit of extra fat for this qualifying session.
Stand by for action, as they used to say. Anything can happen in the next half hour, is how that one used to go. With a bit of luck, we won't have enough of dampness to need to launch Stingray. Although, I am noticing that we do have some of the blue spots on the tyres. Certainly on the number 60 Iron Lynx of Claudio Schiavone, that means that there are wet weather tyres. We have two slick tyre compounds, medium and hard. We're not using the white spotted super softs, if you will, the softest of the compounds. So it is the medium and the hard here, right at the end of pit lane, waiting for the red light to turn green. And that TF Aston, the ORT by TF, that had medium slicks on, Peter. So there's, at the moment, there's no consensus from the teams or the drivers as to whether this needs treaded tyres or whether they feel they can get enough into the slick tyres.
1 minute to open the pit lane. 1 minute to open the pit lane. Please remind your drivers about track limits.
Yes, we will lose those laps straight away. There's everything. Oh, hang on a second. There's some white there as well. Some white spots for the GTs. So
that's
they
the
have... Oh, yes.
That's the soft.
No, that's the soft. White. White is chewing gum.
30 seconds, and there are 30 seconds to open the exit.
And Eduardo Freitas for the first time. So I wonder then if those the selection of tyres are different for the different classes. I did check the notes that Michelin sent through.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Pit exit is now open. Session has been declared wet. Please remind drivers to respect track limits. Any laps which are reported as being done beyond track limits or that we see will be within the possibilities immediately deleted.
Yeah, we don't wait till the end of the lap. They'll go straight away. And the race control feed is up and running at live.fiawec.com/en/race_control. No consensus then as to whether this is a dry track or a wet track. It's declared wet. That just means that people have the option to use treaded tyres, but you don't have to. And these cars do have the softest of the three slick tyres. No intermediates for any of the classes in the FIAWEC. Let's quickly run through the qualifying drivers in this 15-minute session. AF Corsa, number 21, Hiroshi Kazumi. Ahmed Alhati for ORF by TF, number 25. Corette Racing, 33, Ben Keating. Thomas Fleur for the number 54, the silver AF Corsa for Ferrari. Rexy has got PJ Hyatt in it. That's the number 56. Takeshi Kimura for Kessel Racing in the car guy 57. Bright yellow car. Iron Lynx, Claudio Schiavone in the 60. Dempsey Proton, Christian Reid. Ever-present Christian Reid, number 77. Luis Perez Compan, Richard Mille, of course, at number 83. Iron Dames, Sarah Bovey in that car. That's what we were talking about. Here's Christian Reid.
Take the risk, but let me. There are some cars on slicks, so let you know there are some cars on slicks.
Well, he's decided to come straight back in again. Ian James is qualifying. What is, of course, listed in the entry is Northwest AMR, Paul Dallalana's team, who dropped out before Spa this year. That is effectively Heart of Racing in terms of its driver lineup, or still being run with assistance by TF as it was before. And they're back into the pits as well. And Satoshi Yoshino for D Station Racing, the 777 Aston Martin. I suspect, Peter, that those cars that have come into the pits, which are the 77 Porsche, the 83 Ferrari, the 85 Porsche, the 86 GR Racing Porsche, the 98 Aston and AF Corsa number 21, all went out on slick on their rain tyres, and they're coming back in now to give it a go on the softest tyres that they can.
Yeah, the soft, the soft is option, the medium going on to. So the softs are in the garage, but they aren't allowed to use them. That's very strange. Unless they've been given a soft and a medium.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
All the information that I was talking about before, about the two compounds, that was from Michelin, attributed to the GTP class. I'll go back to my notes, because this could be crucial for the race tomorrow, and make sure I've read it right. Have you got it there, good man?
No. We were right the first time. It's the same for hypercar as it is for GTE AM, John.
Right.
Medium and the hard. So the soft is not in the allocation.
So they were in the garage, the white spots on the soft, but we did not see those going onto a car, in fairness.
No, we didn't.
Right, well, I wish they wouldn't do that and confuse me, particularly after a night of no sleep. Now I've been up for 24 hours. All right, let's start watching these times. Remember, the lights on the side of the car will give you an immediate visual representation of whether a car is first, second, or third. Three yellow lights is third, two, second, and one is first position. I think with the track temperature at 27.7 when we started, air temperature is a pleasant 24.2, still 90% humidity. I think it'll take a couple, possibly even as many as three laps to get these tyres up to where the drivers feel comfortable enough to start pushing. That's not to say that people might not do that beforehand. These are quite heavy cars, but that would be my guess. So I'm looking from lap four onwards for the guys who had the slicks on from the start. What do you reckon, Peter?
I agree, John. I think those who were brave to start with have made exactly the right call, because you're going to need those laps to get the heat into the tyres, to get them to their optimum. Ahmed El Harty is fastest at the moment, 143.5, but right now he's nearly 3 seconds up on his fastest lap as he comes up to the line now. How much of an improvement is this going to be? It's going to be enormous improvement here. 143.5 to beat 140.1. So that's how much the lap time is improving lap on lap, from lap one on flyer to second flying lap.
Very impressive. And that is just getting some heat into the tyres. Kessel Racing, the car guy. Distinctive bright yellow 57 Ferrari down through the first corner with the Iron Lynx number 60 sitting in behind it. Another bright yellow car, but that one in the shape of a Porsche. Those guys will be moving to Lamborghini for their GT program next year, as they also take on the Lamborghini LMH hypercar, based on an LMDH rule set for them, of course. Went to Ligier to get them to build them their bespoke chassis. Only ones using Ligier. We've got two chassis manufacturers dealing with two different OEMs. Talk about that in more detail when we get round to those cars. I still feel we're building up heat here. Thomas Fleur coming towards the uphill section, just climbing up to Panasonic, the very distinctive final right-hander, which tightens on the apex. Be careful not to run off onto the green paint over the red and white curbs. A bit of a draft perhaps for the silver Ferrari, right in behind the Iron Lynx Porsche as it goes across the line. Takeshi Kimura, 139.5. ORT in their Aston, 139.6. 139.8 for Thomas Fleur that last time around. Here comes Sarah Bovey out of the final left-hander on her own. Not sure whether you want to have a tour here or not. You probably do down the long straight, but you risk getting caught up in somebody else's issues round the more technical parts, which is effectively from, you know, rounding turn one to coming out of turn 16, Peter.
I agree, you want clear air. I think Sarah Bovey's got this just right, having some really good space around her, because there is quite a disparity in pace amongst these bronze drivers, and Sarah's right up the top of the quickest ones, along with Ben Keating and a few others. So, yeah, you don't want to get caught behind somebody on a fast lap. But I tell you what, John, nothing wrong with the straight-line speed of that Porsche when we looked at Scaudio Schiavone's car.
I totally agree. Held the Kessel Racing car behind down the front straight. Sarah, by the way, straight into second. So it is... Oh, it's Ahmed El Hartik that goes to the top. 139.3. That's a tenth of a second quicker than Hoshino in the Aston. Then Kimura's come back and the Ferrari goes back to the top. The bright yellow Ferrari for Kessel, the 57 car. Sarah Bovey was just 0.016 behind that. She now is half a second away from pole. And here's Ben Keating on his fifth lap. Goes through a 138.7, three-tenths of a second to the good. Sarah Bovey was up on Ben in the first sector, but has dropped a little time in the middle portion. First sector is from the start line through the turn... first corner, then through turn two and just into the braking area for quarter call on the left-hander. Then sector two starts there and runs down to just about where you turn in for Dunlop at turn 12. And then, of course, from there, all that uphill section through Panasonic and pretty much half of the front straight. Laura Wontrop-Klausner in the pit lane for General Motors, head of the GT and endurance racing, new Corvette GT3 to come next year, and TF running those cars in this championship as WEC and Le Mans go to a GT3 format, but still GT3 am in this championship and at Le Mans next year. No full factory teams, which I know is a disappointment, particularly to GM, funnily enough. So Ben Keating up on his own time. Sarah Bovey now at the top with a 38.3, has a 3.5 tenth lead until, Peter, Ben comes across the line.
Well, when Sarah set that time, her Iron Dames teammates Rahel Fry and Michelle Gatting were expressionless because they knew there's so much more speed to come. Ben Keating does go to the top by 35 thousandths of a second. Big applause in the Corvette Racing garage. But I think there's just so much more to come from both cars. Oh, despair in the Iron Dames garage with a smile. There's smiles in all the garages. This is what we like to see. But a bit of traffic now for Ben Keating, so this won't necessarily be a quick lap. So now it's over to Sarah Bovey once more.
Well, he got the advantage of the draft from Claudio Schiavone to the line, but then couldn't get by before the first corner at Daiichi, and that may cost him in this lap. 3.5 minutes to go of the session, just 15 minutes for the two Pro-Am categories. And who is up on the clock at the moment? Keating's up on his own time. Ian James goes through fourth position. It's Corvette 33 from Iron Dames 85 from D Station Aston 777. Half a second between those two. Add Ian James into that half a second as well in the 98 Aston. Also going well. 6 tenths back. Kessel Racing, Takeshi Kimura. Here comes Satoshi Hoshino. I don't think he's going to trouble the front row, but does he improve? He does not. 39.2, 3 tenths away from his best time. Sarah Bovey now coming towards the last couple of corners, and she's really leaning on that bright pink number 85 Porsche as she was going up the hill through the GR Supra corner at turn 15. Two black lines of Michelin rubber. Now out of the final corner, and here's the run to the line. She'll get another lap, but is there the performance left in the Michelin tyres? All kinds of tension up and down the pit lane and in the boxes to the line now. And crosses the line now. 38.3 she has, and that was a 38.5, so no improvement that time around. Ben Keating a 41.7, so that was a slower, possibly even a cool down lap. But Sarah Bovey is still on it. But not very many people showing better times in the splits, Peter.
No, it doesn't seem so. I mean, Sarah Bovey has two more laps left, but I don't know if there's any, as you say, if there's any life left in the tyre.
No. PJ Hyatt improved last time around in the 56 Porsche Rexy 139.1. That's going to put him in on the inside of row four. People at the back of the field improving as well, including Claudio Schiavone and Mike Wainwright. Here comes Ashino to the line. He's half a second away. Ben Keating, is this going to be another pole for the man from Texas? An extraordinary season they've had. Here's PJ to the line. Now, look, he's not as experienced as some of the other drivers. I would expect him to keep improving. Up into ninth, I think I said last time around. Seventh the last time around. Doesn't improve this time around, but very close. 139.174 is his best. 184 on that lap. Koizumi. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, Hiroshi Koizumi here. This is actually his debut in the World Endurance Championship. He did turn up to the race here in Fuji back in 2013, but did not start. So for Hiroshi Koizumi, this is a big weekend for him in that AF Corsa Ferrari.
Peter Mackay and John Hindorf, RS1, part of the Radio Show Limited network of channels, down to the last 10 seconds. So if you're on the lap, you're all right. Hoshino did a really good first sector last time around, in fact, and he's already had that lap cancelled for track limits. So they've been cancelling laps as they've gone along. Checkered flag is out. First car to see it, number 21, Koizumi. So will not improve on the 138.949 he got last time around. Ian James has gone through in the 98 Aston. No better than fourth. I think Ian will take the outside of row two, be happy with that in a 13 car field. Car guy coming to the line. And that is the car guy car rather than car guy Ben Keating, because that's his Twitter handle actually. 57 going through. Kimura does not improve. Ben Keating pits. So he knew he wasn't going to improve. Who have we got left out there, Peter?
Well, at the moment we've got Sarah Bovey on her final lap. I don't know if it's going to be enough to improve. She's only 35 thousandths of a second from the Corvette Racing, the pole-setting Corvette Racing car of Ben Keating. But I think it's going to come up just short. Indeed, she takes the checkered flag and stays where she is. So it does look like Ben Keating is safe here, John.
Another pole position. You said it on Wednesday. Got to give you due to that, Peter, that success ballast doesn't seem to make that much difference to the race pace or indeed even the one lap pace. Still got cars to come to the line, including Luis Perez Compank. Oh no, now Christian Reed, sorry, it was Perez Compank had seen the line and Christian did not improve on his last lap. Who did? Mike Wainwright did. Well done, Mike. And he's vaulted up to 10th position. So everybody heads for the pit lane. So Ben Keating captures another pole position. And the team look very happy down in the pit lane. Nico Varone, along with Nicky Katzberg, celebrating again, thanks to... thanks to their bronze driver. Ben Keating already announced a full season LMP2 campaign for 2024 in IMSA. With no LMP2 in this championship and no GTEs, which is the GT that he wants to drive, he's heading off to IMSA with United Autosport. Here's Nicky Katzberg with Lou.
I mean, Ben must have set that lap a good 3 minutes before the end of that session. That was great. So many different people taking the lead, but he did it.
It was always, it's as always, him and Sarah putting on a good show. So we had to wait until her last lap to be finished. But yeah, Ben did an amazing job. To be fair, I didn't predict him on pole because we were struggling quite a bit with the mixed conditions, but he once again delivered. So super, super happy with that.
Forward to tomorrow.
Oh, yes, we are.
Thank you.
Must be lovely for these pro drivers. A pro driver like Katzberg, so experienced. I'm sure he'd love to go out and do qualifying, but, you know, he's there in his civvies. He's got his jeans and his polo shirt on, Peter, and he's just... almost in some ways expecting Ben to be there or thereabouts, and most times this season he's been there.
It must feel, for a pro driver, of which they're all up and down the field in GTM, it must be feel like you've got the best not so secret weapon in Ben Keating as your bronze driver. It's such an edge having a really quick bronze, and you know, Ben Keating, Sarah Bovey, they definitely fit into that category. And Sarah, she's a really feisty competitor. She'll be looking at the footage going, where did those 35 thousandths of a second go?
Indeed so. I mean, what, 16 corners here? That's a tiny fraction on each corner, isn't it? That's basically what you're seeing. And, you know, that's nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Must be about a tyre's width. Or the length of the transponder.
Yeah. Not a lap record in qualifying. I don't think we had as good conditions as last year when the bulk of the qualifying records were set. It was a 36.3 last year. And that was the... that was pro. Standby caller, I'm talking nonsense. So who was the best arm? It would have been TF Sport. And they did a 39.3. So in fact, no, that is better than last year's in the dry conditions that we had. So despite the less than perfect conditions at the start, they went faster than last year in qualifying. And whilst we're talking about last year, something to keep your eyes peeled for. The best of the P2s last year were Jota, and they did a 31.649.
Okay, a very light scramble this first set, right?
All we want to do is just take the top off, like the lightest you can be on it. Just, I mean, basically no lateral load.
Yeah, copy.
That was Chief Engineer Gary Robertshaw talking to his driver from United Autosport, number 22 car. And again with the track has been declared wet, so we'll hear race control tell the drivers that if they so desire they can put on the treaded tyres. I don't think they will before they go out. It's been an absolute steamroller for Corvette this year, Peter, in GTE arm. And you've got to say, two factors. Well, all of the drivers are a factor. You've got the absolute, and I still think, undervalued Nicky Katzberg. Nico Varone has been an absolute find and one of, if not the best, bronze driver. Certainly, well, actually, in both GT and prototypes, because he's racing them both this year. In Ben Keating, it's an unstoppable force.
It is. They're very hard to beat. And as I mentioned on Midweek Motorsport on Wednesday, Corvette Racing have gone about it in a typically Corvette Racing way. They are a full pro team, and they go, okay, what are we allowed to do? We can't fill the car with superstars like Oliver Gavin, Jan Magnussen, Johnny O'Connell, Antonio Garcia, and so on. But we've got to have a bronze, we've got to have a silver, and we've got to have a gold or platinum. And they go, right, who's the best bronze in the world? Ben Keating. Oh, he's American as well. Oh, fantastic. We'll have him in. Silver, Nico Varone. Yeah, he won't be silver for very long. You might as well have him when he is still a silver. And then Nicky Katzberg, one of the very best GT drivers of his generation, no question about it. Winner of the Nürburgring 24 this year, and I think it's no surprise that Corvette have put him in for a full season next year. Coming back to that, the lap record discussion, John.
Yeah.
What were we there? 138.3.
Yeah.
Matt Campbell holds the qualifying record 5 years ago, when he was just a young lad. 136.992.
And was that in the AM class as well?
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
The pro is Nicky Thiem in that same year, 135.8.
Yeah, I was only looking back at last year. I seem to remember we had intermittent conditions a little bit last year as well. So what's the lap record then? The qualifying record, should I say, for P2? We did a 31.4 last year in qualifying with Jota. What's the...
So the qualifying record in LMP2 is Anthony Davidson, a 128.0.
Wow.
I don't think we're going to get there. LMP2 performance has changed quite a bit.
How far does that go back, Peter?
Five years.
Aye. Those were the full-fat cars at that point. They've been slowed down and... significant changes to the tyre compounds as well. No qualifying tyres allowed. And, of course, both the tyre suppliers, Michelin and now Goodyear, have been asked by the sanctioning body to make their tyres more durable. So they use fewer of them during the race weekends. And therefore,
30 seconds, under 30 seconds to open pit lane for LMP2 qualifying session.
Thank you, Eduardo. So they aren't as easy to switch on, and therefore you don't get the single lap performance. Never mind the fact that the aero's been changed and the cars have
less
power from the engine.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Pit exit is open. LMP2 qualifying session has started. Please remind drivers they need to respect track limits.
So, LMP2 have their 15 minutes. I was going to say in the sun. Well, in the overcast slightly at the moment. But here we are setting the grid for the 6 hours of Fuji. Let me give you the drivers as I can when they go out. It's Ben Fiscal, single-seater hot shoe. In the number 9 Prema Racing LMP2. Gabby Aubrey for Vector Sport in the number 10 car. Phil Hansen in the number 22. That was who Gary Robertshaw was talking to earlier on, telling him just very gently on the outlap, they don't want to take too much out of the tyres. I thought that was interesting. Ollie Jarvis in the 23 car for United. Pietro Fittipaldi for Jota's number 28. 31 Team WRT is Ferdy Habsburg. Albert Costa for Inter-Europol in the yellow and green 34. The two Alpines, Ollie Caldwell in the 35. And in the team car, the 36, Mathieu Vaxavier. Louis Delatraz for Team WRT's 41. And the second of the Premiers, number 63, Andrea Caldarelli. That's your lineup. And despite the fact we've only got 11 cars on the track, they're all in a bunch as they go down to the hairpin. Of course they are. Where's your money
that's
on here, Peter?
Yeah, that's very interesting, John, because that tells me that the drivers and teams are in a rush to get a banker lap in.
Yeah.
Which rain means, coming? What do they know?
Yeah.
Do they expect more rain to come in? Or are they just being conservative?
Track is looking about the best it has done today. Certainly was way more greasy earlier on. Quite a few people peeling off into the pits. Pietro Fittipaldi, Ferdy Habsburg, Louis Delatraz for Jota, Team WRT, both of their cars. Ben Fiscal was one of the later cars out. So at the sharp end of the field, it is Matty Vaxavier. So what are they taking off? Don't tell me they were scrubbing in wets there, were they? No. But that maybe was an older set of tyres, and now they're going on to brand new?
Seems like it. Yeah, seems like it. Or just doing a little bit of scrubbing, because there hasn't been much dry running at all.
No. That is a very good
weekend.
Point.
That's, so I suspect they need to scrub some dry tyres.
You've got that on the head, Mr. Mackay. Well done, P-Mac. And that's why Gary was telling Phil Hansen not to put any lateral load on the tyres. Phil's come in. They've just basically taken the release agent, the shininess, off those four Goodyear slicks, and he's put another set of tyres on to go out. So that's got nothing to do with anything other than being prepared for the race, because there's no morning warm-up tomorrow. The next time that we see all of these cars will be as they are going round on the formation lap to the grid. Good spot there, Peter.
Well, it's cutting into valuable qualifying time, I suppose. But as we saw in the GTM session, you don't need all the 15 minutes. The tyre just won't give you the pace for the entire session. Ollie Jarvis winding up for a lap now in the United Autosports number 23. Yep, he's going to go for a run here. So let's have a look and see if we get our first indicative time on the board. Vector Sport, they're doing the same idea. Changing tyres. This is almost like watching a British touring car qualifying session, John, where they cross them over halfway through.
Yeah, yes. Oh, I remember those well.
Okay, copy mate, copy. We will have lower tyre pressure from next set. Manage it.
So that was Mathieu Vaxvier being spoken to by his team, the number 36 Alpine, and he is just coming out of the pits now. So again, slightly delayed in terms of that radio message. They come in about a minute and a half behind for fairly obvious reasons. So Ollie Jarvis with a 140.724. So that is not a representative lap as yet. So we're certainly a third through this session, Pete. We've not seen a properly representative lap from any of the cars yet.
No, we haven't, but we're seeing on our pictures Albert Costa absolutely on the ragged edge of adhesion, a 134.7, 6 seconds quicker than anyone, and putting in so much risk there, and goes to the top of the timesheets in the Inter-Europol car. I've never seen an LMP2 car in such incredible angles and put a competitive time in like that, John. Amazing.
Hammered the curb down at turn 11 in the middle of the chicane. So there's plenty of time still to come from that car, and therefore from everyone else. Phil Hansen with a second set of tyres in. By the way, Albert Costa and Ollie Jarvis are the only two of the 11 cars who've not come back into the pit lane. So they're on the tyres with which they started this session some 6.5 minutes ago. Therefore, they are closer to getting the tyres into the window. Phil Hansen goes through with a 36.1, faster than his teammate, but Ollie Jarvis clearly on a different run plan. Jarvis now coming to the end of his fourth lap, and he will go to pole position by some margin. And remember, in what may have been a bit of a quali sim in FP3, he ended up 1.8 seconds ahead of the rest of the field. And he's coming through to the final corner now, and he's going to be that and more ahead of Albert Costa's time. This is going to be a low 32, possibly even a 31, as he comes through. Oh, it's a high 32. I thought he found a little more than that, if I'm honest.
Impressive lap from Oliver Jarvis, though.
Very impressive.
Yeah, that's, I think we're going to see the...
Sorry, Peter. 9 tenths ahead of everybody else.
Aubrey looked like he was up in Sector 1, he was up in Sector 2 for Vector Sport, but went away in Sector 3. Now, into Europol competition, fitting new Goodyear Eagle tyres. No wonder, because Albert Costa didn't give the previous ones much respect, that's for sure. So Inter Europol are going to throw new tires at this and have a go at trying to beat that time of Oliver Jarvis, who's up again in Sector 1.
So by my reckoning, I think Ollie Jarvis and Albert Costa went out on a set of used slicks and basically did a 4-stroke, 5-lap run on them. So Ollie will come round this time, and if he's up, he might go through. If he's not, he'll dive back into the pits, and they'll decide whether they think they need to put a new set of tyres on and send him again. Everyone else scrubbed in a new set and came in either after 1 or 2 laps, and so are still coming up to temperature and pressure. But you did hear on the radio to Matty Baxter, his engineer said, we'll go with lower starting pressures for the next set. Now that means it will take them longer to come up. They put the higher pressures in the tyres they wanted to scrub off, because they wanted to get as much of the tyre on the ground as possible. Here's Aubrey to the line in the Vector Sport red, white and black car, and does improve. 132.876 goes to second, and Costa's gone straight on a new set of tyres.
As Aubrey goes straight on there.
Excuse me. That was because we were listening to Costa. Gabby Aubrey locked up going into turn one. Phil Hansen goes into second now, but still 2.5 tenths away from his teammate Ollie Jarvis. 23 from 22. Aubrey in third in the number 10 Vector Sport car. Then Prema with Andrea Caldarelli. Then Ben Viscal for Prema. And your top six is completed by Louis Delatraz. 1.1 seconds between the top six at the moment. 5 minutes to go, Peter.
It seems like Gabby Aubrey is going away in the third sector. He's quicker than anyone in Sector 1 and Sector 2, and then the lap time falls away. Let's see Louis Delatraz if he suffers the same in Sector 3. He's right on the money in Sector 1 and 2. Goes quickest. Louis Delatraz for Team WRT number 41, quickest. So he's mastered that third sector.
Small margins, Peter. Just 0.050, half a tenth. Ollie Jarvis now pits. And with 4.5 minutes left, he's only going to get one prep lap, possibly two, but he's going to have to hustle. They are going to have to hustle here. Cross the line for Phil Hansen. He's up. Looks like United may take the pole position back provisionally, coming through the final corner. He might get a little bit of a draft as well. There's a car about 8 or 10 lengths ahead at the moment. WRT from United, and Phil Hansen does go to the top. Now that's a more significant improvement, 0.221 of a second, but that's on his fifth lap on those tyres. Ollie Jarvis has gone back out. He's not going to get 5 laps, so he's going to have to switch on the tyres that have just been put on really quickly, Peter.
And that's a big statement from Phil Hansen.
It is.
That's there's a battle for superiority in that garage, I'm sure, and Phil Hansen has just laid a really big statement of intent. Louis Delatraz to the line. This could be a very, very good lap up in Sector 1 and 2. And curiously, does it go away in Sector 3? It does.
Yeah.
It's an improvement for Louis Delatraz, so the gap is only 91 thousandths of the second for pole. Well, that's a huge gap compared to GTEM, which was 35 thousandths.
So, Delatraz fastest of anybody in the first two sectors, but eclipsed by just on a tenth of a second by Phil Hansen in Sector 3 with the United number 22 car. Ollie Jarvis left the pits a minute ago, so he should be coming round any second now. He will have time for two prep laps. Oh no, he won't. He'll have time for one prep lap and two. Will he get two flyers? He might just get two flyers. How has the team work this out? So it's United Autosport from Team WRT, from United Autosport from Jota. Big names in LMP2 and Team WRT and Jota have parlayed the success that they have found relatively recently, of course, in WRT's case, into LM Hypercar, the Mon Hypercar programmes. United Autosport surely can't be that far behind. I know they were very, very close at the end of last year, beginning of this, to a big manufacturer programme. Wasn't to be for them this time around. WRT looked like they'd lost their chance when Audi withdrew from sports car racing to evaluate going into Formula One, a programme that is potentially under threat, is what I'm hearing from contacts in Germany. And that Audi may step aside from that before they've even got started. What that means for them in sports car racing, I've no clue. Right, down to the last minute now.
That would be a fairly high-profile embarrassment, John, if that happened, and it would be in quite stark contrast to their previous sports car racing, which was nothing other than dominant.
Wow, spectacular, wasn't it?
Yes.
I think I don't think anything will happen in season. The intelligence that we've had is that any announcement would come at the end of this season. However, of course, there is a certain Andretti Global, as they are called now, who are fighting to get into Formula One, and all the questions about European law and restraint of trade would be moot if they took over an existing team. And I suspect that the backing of GM, as Andretti have, whatever asking price Audi would want for Sauber would be met. Jota coming to the line. Pietro Fittipaldi, good first sector. Half a second down in sector two. But if he can hold on to that, that might move. No, it can't. He's on the outside of row two as the Gibson engine screams past the line. No improvement for Gabby Aubrey or for Ben Fiscal in the Vector Sport or Prema Racing team. Where is Ollie Jarvis and what times is he doing? Answer, not. I don't think he's quick enough. Phil Hansen was up in the first sector, but I don't think he's going to improve. 3/10 down in the middle, goes through. His 132.1 is good enough. 132.6 for him that time around. Still waiting for Delatraz and Ollie Jarvis. Those are the only two drivers. Phil Hansen did take the fastest first sector, though.
Important lap for Albert Costa here, down in 10th at the moment, right on the money, John. This could be a real big climb here for Albert Costa.
The yellow and green car, Costa moves up to fifth position, 132.8, as he goes across the line. Delatraz Pitts and Ollie Jarvis. Well, he did his run the opposite way round. He didn't try for a time. He basically scrubbed in a set of tyres at the end. So he banked his 132.4, which he did on, I think, his fourth or fifth lap. And then he basically cruised around for a lap or two. And that was the exact opposite. That's very interesting tactics from United. They split their tactics there between the two cars, Peter.
That's why they're the front-running outfit that they are. United Autosport, so, so clever. And that really paid off. But it still takes the driver behind the wheel to really put it on the edge and take the risk. And that lap from Phil Hansen in the middle of the session there was just superb. And for Phil, you know, one of his teammates, Philippe Albuquerque, is one of the best prototype drivers in the last decade. So you've got to go out there and do the business. And Phil did exactly that there. And he'll be delighted, I think, because that was a huge lap and just edged it from Louis Delatraz by 91 thousandths of a second.
Still amazing to think that Phil Hansen is only 24 years old, the young Londoner, been racing for a long time and has amassed a lot of experience and confidently took that pole position. Well, you're talking about Philippe Albuquerque. Let's hear what he's got to say. His car, thanks to Phil, will start on pole position in LMP2.
Philippe Albuquerque, it's pole for the 22 United Autosport. You can see the smile on Phil's face there.
Very true. I mean, it's when you're doing on a pole position in LMP2, which is so competitive, it's hard to not be happy. It's down to the ego, because down 6 hours is way too long, but going out there against top drivers and do it the pole like Phil did, it's amazing. It's his first pole position in WEC. He just came from LMS with pole position, so as his teammate from the last 7 years, I'm just, full of proud for this kid. He's just doing amazing.
I can see it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So there you go. I said he might only be 24, Phil Hansen, but, 7, 8 years of very high quality driving experience behind him. Richard Dean down there in the pit as well. One of the real driving forces behind United Autosports, co-owner with Zach Brown, of course. Zach is at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca, overseeing Champ Car for McLaren. Having a good chat with Michael Andretti yesterday afternoon. Two massive characters in that paddock as well. So United Autosport with a 132.1 from Team WRT and United. 22.41.23. Jota in fourth position will round up the second row. On the third row into Europol and Vector, 34.10. Then Team WRT, 31. And the number 9, Prema. 36, Alpine. On the inside of row 5 with the 63 Prema for company and the 35 Alpine in 11th position. Not the pace from the Alpine team again that we were, I think, hoping for. That is all subject to post-qualifying scrutineering checks, of course, technical inspection. We have just about 5 minutes before the hypercar session gets underway. And if you weren't with us earlier on for free practice 3, we'll give you a pass this time because it was on a strange time zone, particularly if you're in Europe. However, what a session. What an absolute barnstormer of a session with Toyota from Peugeot, from Hertz Team Jota, from Peugeot, from Proton Porsche, from Ferrari, from Toyota and Cadillac for your top 8. The two Penske's and the two Porsche Penske Motorsport 963's and the 50 Ferrari down in 9th, 10th and 11th position. Wow, I think is what we've got to say for that.
I think, John, that they were on a different programme in that session, I would wager.
You'd hope.
When we heard from Michael Christensen, the car, the number 5 Porsche Penske Motorsport machine, had the rear engine cover off and everything, and he was saying, we're making some adjustments ready for qualifying and the race. The one thing I would say, though, is on the speed traps, the two customer Porsches, the privately entered Porsches, the Hertz Team Jota, and the WeatherTech Proton car were quicker through the speed traps than both factory cars, the Porsche Penske cars. So certainly there's work to do for the work squad. Lap record-wise, the WEC lap record is held by an LMP2 car, as we mentioned, from 5 years ago with Anthony Davidson, a 128 flat. Kamui Kobayashi last year, John, in qualifying, a 129.2. I think we could see that drop in this section.
Great point from Right Turn Lover, listening in the centre of Europe. The Matt Campbell time set in GTM qualifying would have been the fastest lap in GTM qualifying, but it would have been the two-driver qualifying format. So he wasn't a bronze driver in that. So that's a great point, and I had completely forgotten about that. Well, at least not forgotten about it. I hadn't thought about it in terms of the lap time being set. So I think 39.3, we said, didn't we, was the bronze driver lap record, if you will.
And like for like, that's impressive, because Matt Campbell, even in those days, you know, when he was in these very early stages of his Porsche career, he was still a real hot shoe. Mm. And now he's the prototype racing superstar. You know,
oh, and such
Campbell
a nice lad.
Very, yes, absolutely, and thoroughly deserves every opportunity that he's earned. So, yeah, that just shows you how impressive the pace is from some of our top bronze driver to get anywhere close. So the track is still declared wet. We haven't had any rainfall since the qualifying session began. With dry tyres have been the order of the day for GTE-AM and LMP2. I do not expect anything different.
Indeed. Toyota and Porsche working a slightly different strategy here. There's a few cars, including the Ferraris.
1 minute to start hypercar qualifying. I remind you, the track has been declared wet. All cars with rain lights on in low mode. Please remind drivers they need to respect track limits.
Eduardo Freitas almost saying LMP. Qualifying there. LMH. Slight difference in tactics. The Ferraris have lined up ready to go, with Nicholas Nielsen behind the wheel of his 499P.
30 seconds, under 30 seconds.
Whereas Porsche is still in the garage, and Toyota are on the pit lane, but remember, they've swapped their pit. Normally they are pit out here, they are first pit in, and I reckon they'll let the whole queue of cars go, trying to get more heat into their tyres before they roll. Actually, number 8's just rolled down the pit lane now.
3, 2, 1. Pit exit is now open.
And the Hertz team, Jota Porsche 963 in Hertz Racing Gold, has Andrew Felix da Costa behind the wheels, Nicholas Nielsen in the 50, as we mentioned, James Collado, his teammate in the 51, Mikkel Jensen for Peugeot number 93, Loic Duval for Peugeot number 94, Jimmy Bruni qualifying the number 99, the WeatherTech Proton competition, Porsche 963. Stand by for action from that car. They're getting their heads around that now. Alex Lynn, Cadillac number 2 with the blue front. Tristan Vautier for Colin Collis's team. And we wait to see the exit of the 5 and 6 from Porsche Penske Motorsport and Toyota Gazoo Racing number 7, the GRO10. Just going back to what you said before we start getting lap times here, Peter. Very interesting that the lap times were better for the private Porsches and the lap speeds were better. That suggests to me that there is a difference of opinion, or at least a different aero setup going on those cars. There is no mandated wing angle as the remaining cars start to come out. So I'll give you the drivers for that. Kevin Estra in the number 6 Porsche Penske Motorsport, and Kamui Kobayashi with the GR Racing flags waving for him opposite their pit, and we're still waiting for the number 5. Nothing's mandated here, so the teams can actually work their way through it. And in fact, and I was talking to teams about this, and I'm not sure this has happened yet, but it will happen at some stage in the near future. You'll remember that hypercar software for the control of very dangerous waving by the Peugeot going across the line with two Ferraris sitting next to it, and I think that will be spoken to by race control. That was very, very naughty indeed. There was almost an accident here. Avoiding action had to be taken not once but twice by Ferrari number 50 on that Peugeot number 94, driven by Loic Duval, very experienced driver. I'll get this point in before we get some lappery Peter. The control software for regenerative braking and deployment is free. The manufacturers can develop themselves, and the teams can further develop that. So it isn't like the old days where you had potentially exactly the same. You could have something different, and you could have possibly, if you've got somebody cleverer, you could have something better.
Well, when I spoke with Dane Cameron back at Daytona in January, I asked him what's the biggest development challenge been, and he said, "That's easy." He says it's definitely the brake-by-wire system in these new cars. He says that's where they've spent the majority of the time testing at Vysak and then out at racetracks all around the world. So the brake-by-wire system and the software around that, very, very important indeed. I do think the differences in times in free practice three, I think, was down to the programs being run by each team. I do think Porsche Penske Motorsport were looking beyond. They weren't trying to put in a big time in free practice three, but we'll see. Coming back to that Peugeot though, John, I think that was the 94 car of Duval. That to me, that was, as you said, super dangerous. And then beyond that, impeding the two Ferraris, no doubt race control will be studying that one closely.
Totally agree. It wasn't just one, it was two. And the number 50 Ferrari, with Nicholas Nielsen behind the wheel, was actually flashing his headlights quite insistently. Basically, I don't necessarily think he wanted to be through, although I think that was the point, but he certainly wanted to let him know he was there.
The sister car in front is going to do two prep laps. Remember to prepare the exit if this is your push lap.
I'm going to stay on target, fired on ready.
James Calado.
Again. That's an amazing relationship between engineer and driver. For the engineer to give any kind of remote hint of driving advice, it shows you that there's quite a mutual respect and trust between the two of them.
Absolutely. He's sometimes got to be a bit stern with James. The radio traffic is worth listening to. Down to the first corner. And straight on at the first corner for the number 93, Mikkel Jensen. Already, Antonio Felix da Costa has gone under 90 seconds. 129.436. So that's impressive. Not quite the 29.234 that we had last year. But that was very early on. Alex Lynn in the Cadillac. Now let's see how he comes through the second sector. Oh, he's up, and he's well up. This could be the first 128 that we've seen from Alex Lynn. If he can hold on to this in the last sector, and that's not easy because effectively there are six corners in that final sector. I suppose seven corners, really. Da Costa.
Kobayashi now, John. This is him going for his flying lap now. He's done his build laps. Kobayashi really winding up out the final corner there to head on to his quick lap. And in any qualifying session, you've got to watch Kobayashi. But Lynn over the line to pole, 128.7. Wow.
So there's your first 128. Alex Lynn. High 28 for the blue-fronted Cadillac. This is the car that's been, generally speaking, closest to the ACO rules car. This is an IMSA rule car. And generally speaking, this is the car that's done best. Completely different rule sets,
Alex,
for the two cars.
Two more push. Gap ahead is 4 seconds. Currently P3, 29.1 is the pace.
Well, I think that was before he went across the line.
Must be.
Yeah, because he said 29.1 is the pace and he's just done a 28.7. That was Alex Lynn.
Kevin Estra at full push in the number 6 Penske Porsche. And is up on in Sector 2, for absolute best in Sector 2, but Kobayashi, I think, is about to blow everyone into the sea here with this lap, John.
It's going to be quick across the line. Estra takes provisional pole with a 28.6. He holds it for about a half a second. Kamui Kobayashi restores the pride of Toyota Gazoo Racing at their home circuit with a 27.7. This is outstanding stuff. Anyone who thinks these cars are in any way inferior to the old LMP1Hs, yes, they're heavier, but my goodness me, these times, we've seen it with the LMDH versions in IMSA, they're right up with the pace of the old big V10 diesels with 1,000 horsepower, and they're getting lap record race times with smaller tyres, with half that power and with far less aero. Jimmy Bruni in the final sector now, currently the Proton car. They're still working with this car, but he's sitting in eighth position and still has one of the Porsche Penske Motorsports. But that's the first time we've seen the Porsche Penske Motorsport cars come to life this week so far, Peter.
And I think that's what they've been building to. Yeah. And Kevin Estra was absolutely on the limit. But Kobayashi, again, is going to be... I mean, it's already 9/10 of a second up. Kobayashi is about to make a mockery of that lap time again. And, oh, it went away in Sector 3.
It did.
So he was 2/10 up after the second sector, and he misses it by 77 thousandths. But I think it would just be drilling home the point, to be honest. That lap time is going to take some stopping.
And it's an old Toyota Gazoo front row at the moment. Brendan Hartley's just gone through with a 28.4, but 6¼ tenths between the two GRO10s. That is huge. Absolutely huge. We have nothing to do with this, but it's just come up a couple of minutes ago. Peugeot number 94, behaviour on the straight under investigation. Under investigation, and we've had laps deleted for both of the Peugeots, the number 50 Ferrari and the number 8 Toyota, and the number 21 as well. 21? 8 and 20. There isn't a 21 out there. 51 it must be. Mostly turn one, but not exclusively. 6 and 8 of car. It does say car 21. I'm not being stupid, am I?
That's a strange one. Faces.
That would have been the AF Corsa Ferrari, and that hasn't been out for a very, very long time. So,
yes.
Have they lost that post their session? Looks like there's a bit of rain on the windscreens as well, Peter.
It's battering off the windscreen of Fred Makovecki's Porsche 963, and the time's just dropping away a touch. It might be in the case of what motorcyclists call mental rain, where it's just because they're travelling so fast, there's only very light moisture in the air, but it's hitting the windscreen at a fair pace. Nicholas Nielsen, this is an important lap for the number 50 Ferrari driver, 127.7 to beat. It's not an improvement. Some very glum faces at Ferrari. They're only 6th and 7th at the moment. And more ominously, they're over a second off the pace.
3.5 minutes to go. And I wonder when we saw that lap time being lost in the third sector. That is where the rain generally comes from. And if it's just starting to get damp there, you're leading through one of the more technical sections. And Jimmy Bruni has felt the need to wipe the windscreen there now. And you do that only as a last resort. You let the preparation on the windscreen that is put on by the mechanics, you let it bead up and disappear. Here comes Jimmy onto the front straight in that red, white and blue Proton WeatherTech Porsche. Do you know that there are moments, particularly in low light, when those 963s are coming towards you, you don't have to squint very much for it to be a 962. You really don't. It's got a very similar profile from the front three quarters and a low shot Ferrari in the pit lane is the number 51 car. Also Alex Lynn in the pit lane for Cadillac. Kevin Estra in. In fact, both of the Porsche Penske Motorsports now in as through the pit lane speed limiter for Kevin Estra. Kamui Kobayashi with his 127.7 says, yep, that's it, I'm sticking. And he's followed in by his teammate. So the top six are still in. I tell you what, it's a decent run by the Bicolors car. They are barely four-tenths, just on four-tenths away from Loïc de Vals Peugeot into the pit lane from Tristan Fortier. 3.377. But however, that is 4 seconds off the Toyota pace. 4 seconds in 2.8 miles. Ouch. 132.
Just when it looked to be looking promising for Peugeot, that Monza looked like they'd really turned a corner. It doesn't seem to be the case here. The only thing I might wager is that they were planning to build till late in the session and the rains caught them out. Kamui Kobayashi, he's
happy.
He's confident, that's it. I mean, Kamui Kobayashi, is he the best qualifier since... Well, certainly in the history of the World Endurance Championship in its 11 years, I would say. Is he the best qualifier in sports car racing history? I'd put him up there with Beloff. I mean, he's that good at this type of thing.
Marco Werner for me.
Yeah.
Marco Werner in the Audi R8 era, particularly in the States. He was so smooth, but he was so millimetre perfect. I remember him at Trois-Rivières gently grazing the wall, coming out onto the back straight-ish as it was, lap after lap. Just enough to put a tiny little bit of white paint onto the right rear Michelin and the wing end plate. But he was doing it deliberately every single lap. Werner was the qualifying king for me in that era.
Dumas was pretty handy too.
He was a madman. Even Timo Bernard would shake it when he was his teammate, would shake his head on that in the Spider, the Porsche Spider. Behaviour of car 94, Peugeot on the straight, investigated after the session by the stewards. Might get a grid penalty for that. Now, that said, they're 11th, 10th and 11th at the moment. It's two Toyotas on the front row, 7 from 8. Kamui Kobayashi with the pole lap. Brendan Hartley some 6.5 tenths behind. But an improvement for Porsche Penske Motorsport. They'll start on the second row as they lock that out. Then it's Cadillac. And in a little bit of an interloper ahead of two Ferraris that will start on the outside of row 3 and the inside of row 4. Then Hertz Team Jota in 8th, Proton Competition in 9th, 10th and 11th for Peugeot, and Bicolors in 12th position. As it stands now, but with some investigation for that bizarre behaviour by Loïc de Vals. I mean, there are very few more experienced drivers than Loïc de Vals on this grid. Kamui Kobayashi on the pit apron. The camera flashes go off. Always in front of the pits, there are a set of flag bearers who wave the flag every time their particular favourite car goes by. And as you might imagine here at Fuji, where the GRO10 was developed, of course, and the technical centre is just down the road for Toyota, and the development centre for their road cars as well. Road car research and development paying for this whole programme. So plenty of people outside their pit. Ferrari drivers, James Calado in particular, not happy with their positions down in 6th and 7th. Here's Kamui, our pole sitter for tomorrow.
Kamui Kobayashi, how good is that? To get the pole, but also in front of this home crowd.
Yeah, I mean, thank you very much. I think it was a great car. And, of course, I think we had, some fun around here. It's Saturday. Tomorrow, I'm looking forward. The weather is better. And I think important is tomorrow's race. But at least, I think, to take the pole to start tomorrow, that's great. Thank you very much.
It's very good to see those flags flying.
Yeah, you want to have a crack?
Kamui Kobayashi with a glint in his eye, smile on his face, taking pole position. We'll start alongside Brendan Hartley. That's brilliant for Toyota. They'll love that here. That'll put a few extra thousand on the gate as well. Two Penske, the Porsche Penske Motorsport 963s, 6 and 5 in third and fourth. Then Cadillac, then the two Ferraris, then Hertz Team Jota, Proton, the two private Porsches. Peugeot in 10th and 11th, and Bicolis in 12th position. Excellent run for Toyota, and that unlocks their run down to the first corner. They can control everything, whatever the weather does, Peter. They will think that that's the first part of the job done, at least. And it was United Autosports, by the way, and Phil Hansen and Ben Keating and Corvette who took the P2 and GTE ampoules. But Toyota much happier than the than what we saw when they were pipped to the pole at Le Mans in June. They'll be delighted, and that opens up their strategy as well.
It does, and the thing is, John, as well, coming down into turn one, it's very, very tight going into there. So if you don't qualify well and you're further back in that pass, the risk goes through the roof of being clipped at that opening corner. So to qualify at the front of your class is a huge advantage in terms of reducing that risk of having your race ruined at that point.
Peter Mackay was on duty with me, alongside me in the Global Broadcast Centre. Thanks to Tim Gray up in London. Keep your ears open for our Spa BMW special across this WEC weekend. WRT with the car that they'll be campaigning here next year. We'll give you more details of that on the socials, and you'll be able to download it as well this weekend. Just over an hour and a quarter's worth of interviews from Spa last week. Well, hope you've enjoyed our coverage of Free Practice 3 and of the qualifying sessions here on Saturday. Set your alarm clocks if you're in Europe for the race. Our coverage starts at 2:30 British Summer Time. That's 3:30 Central European Summer Time. And that then is 2, 1, 12, 11, 10. That's 9:30 Eastern. I literally had to do that on my fingers for tomorrow's coverage. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday, wherever you are in the world. We'll have full live and free coverage of the Fuji 6 hours for the penultimate round of the WEC tomorrow here on RS1. Join us then, and keep an eye open as well for our times for Nürburgring. Two 6 hour races this weekend. Johnny Palmer and Peter Snowden on duty on Saturday and Sunday. Saturday afternoon is quite a late one, runs into the twilight. Sunday is the more usual time. So they'll be along a little later on today. And then Sunday is the normal time for that particular outlet, and we'll have video for you on that as well. Right, that's it. I'm off for a cup of tea and a bit of breakfast. And lots of motorsport to catch up on this weekend. Kamui Kobayashi, pole position for Toyota at Fuji. Bye for now.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.